Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the fifth canto, chapter 1, text 4. Samshayo yam mahan brahman. Dada gada sutadishu. Saktasya yasidhirabhut. Krishne cha matirachuta. Samshayo yam mahan brahman. Dada gada sutadishu. Saktasya yat siddhir abhut. Krishne cha matirachuta. Samshayo yam mahan brahman. Dada gada sutadishu. Saktasya yat siddhir abhut. Krishne cha matirachuta. Others, sorry. Samshaya, doubt. I am this. Mahan, great. Brahman, O Brahmana. Dada, to the wife. Agara, home. Suta, children. Adishu, and so on. Saktasya, of a person attached. Yat, because. Sudhi, perfection. Abhut, became. Krishne, unto Krishna. Cha, also. Mati, attachment. Achyuta, infallible. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The king continued, O great Brahmana, this is my great doubt. How is it possible for a person like King Priyavrata, who was so attached to wife, children, and home, to achieve the topmost infallible perfection in Krishna consciousness? Purport. King Prickett wondered how a person so attached to wife, children, and home could become so perfectly Krishna conscious. Prahlad Maharaj has said, Matirna Krishne Paratasvatova Mitobe Pajeta Grihavratanam. A Grihavrata, or one who has taken a vow to execute family duties, has no chance to become Krishna conscious. This is because most Grihavratas are guided by sense gratification and therefore gradually glide down to the darkest regions of material existence. Adanta Gobir Visatam Tamishram. How can they possibly become perfect in Krishna consciousness? Maharaj Prickett asked Sukadeva Goswami to resolve this great doubt. So I'm going to go ahead and read the next text here and do that as well. Sri Sukuvacha Badam Uktam Bhagavata Uttama Shlokasha Srimach Charanaravinda Makarandarasa Avesita Chetaso Bhagavata Paramahamsa Dayata Katam Kinchit Antaraya Vitam Swam Shivatamam Paravimna Prayena Himvati. Translation. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, what you have said is correct. The glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is praised in eloquent transcendental verses by such exalted personalities as Brahma, are very pleasing to great devotees and liberated persons. One who is attached to the nectarian honey of the Lord's lotus feet and whose mind is always absorbed in His glories may sometimes be checked by some impediment, but he still never gives up the exalted position he has acquired. Purport. Sri Sukadeva Goswami accepted both the king's propositions, that a person who is advanced in Krishna consciousness cannot enhance materialistic life again, and that one who has embraced materialistic life cannot take up Krishna consciousness at any stage of his existence. Although accepting both these statements, Sukadeva Goswami qualified them by saying that a person who has once absorbed his mind in the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead may sometimes be influenced by impediments, but he still does not give up his exalted devotional position. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, there are two kinds of impediments to devotional service. The first is an offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnav. This is called Vaishnav Aparad. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warned his devotees not to commit Vaishnav Aparad, which he described as the mad elephant offense. When a mad elephant enters a beautiful garden, it destroys everything, leaving a barren field. Similarly, the power of Vaishnav Aparad is so great that even an advanced devotee becomes almost devoid of his spiritual assets if he commits it. Since Krishna consciousness is eternal, it cannot be destroyed altogether. But advancement may be checked for the time being. Thus, Vaishnav Aparad is one kind of impediment to devotional service. Sometimes, however, the Supreme Personality of God or his devotee desires to impede one's devotional service. For example, Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha were formerly Jai and Vijay, the gatekeepers in Vaikuntha. But by the desire of the Lord, they became his enemies for three lives. Thus, the desire of the Lord is another kind of impediment. But in both cases, the pure devotee, one advanced in Krishna consciousness, cannot be lost. Following the orders of his superiors, Swayambhuva Manu and Lord Brahma, Priyavrata accepted family life, but this does not mean that he lost his position in devotional service. Krishna consciousness is perfect and eternal, and therefore it cannot be lost under any circumstances. Because the material world is full of obstructions to advancement in Krishna consciousness, there may appear to be many impediments, yet Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, declares in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 31, Kaunteya Pratijanahi Name Bhakta Pranashati. Once one has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, he cannot be lost. In this verse, the word Shiva Tamam is very significant. Shiva Tamam means the most auspicious. The devotional path is so auspicious that a devotee cannot be lost under any circumstances. This is described in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita by the Lord himself. Partha Naveha Namutra Vinasas Tasya Vijite. My dear Arjuna, for a devotee there is no question of being lost either in this life or in the next. Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, text 40. In Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, text 43, the Lord clearly explains how this is so. Tattratam buddhisam yogam labhate purvadehikam yatate chatato buya samsidhau kurunandana. By the order of the Lord, a perfect devotee sometimes comes to this material world like an ordinary human being. Because of his previous practice, such a perfect devotee naturally becomes attached to devotional service, apparently without cause. Despite all kinds of impediments due to surrounding circumstances, he automatically perseveres in devotional service and gradually advances until he once again becomes perfect. Bilvamangala Thakur had been an advanced devotee in his previous life, but in his next life he became greatly fallen and was attracted to a prostitute. Suddenly, however, his entire behavior was changed by the words of the very prostitute who had so much attracted him, and he became a great devotee. In the lives of exalted devotees, there are many such instances, proving that once one has taken to the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, he cannot be lost. Kaunteya Pratijanahi Name Bhakta Pranashati. The fact is, however, that one becomes a devotee when he is completely freed from all reactions to sinful life. As Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 28, Yesham tvantikatam papam jananam punyakarmanam tedvanva mohaniya mukta bhajantimam jridavitaha. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this, whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, and who are freed from the duality of illusion, engage themselves in my service with determination. On the other hand, as Prahlad Maharaj said, Matirna Krishna Parata Svatova Mito Bipajeta Griha Ratanam. A person who is too attached to materialistic family life, home, family, wife, children, and so on, cannot develop Krishna consciousness. These apparent contradictions are resolved in the life of a devotee by the grace of the Supreme Lord, and therefore a devotee is never bereft of his position on the path of liberation, which is described in this verse as Shiva Tamam Padavim. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasnaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaudavani Pacharine Nivashesha Sunyavadi Pastaja Deshatarine. So on Wednesday morning, when I was about to start my walk, I went outside the temple room. I was putting my sneakers on there. And my friend asked me, what are you doing? Where are you going? So I said, oh, I'm going on a Joppa walk. I said, would you like to come? And he said, yeah, sure. So I, you know, waited for him, and he went to get his shoes for walking as well, and he came along. So we were walking, and as we got into the walk, it became apparent that, you know, it wasn't his regular practice, so I was walking kind of fast for him, you know, so it was hard for him to keep up. And so I was very happy to have some company on the walk, but at the same time, it was very frustrating because, you know, the whole idea is get out there and get some exercise at the same time as get your rounds done. So anyway, so at one point we made this arrangement that I would kind of go ahead and, you know, I would wait for him at a certain point. And although, you know, I didn't verbalize it so much. It kind of was understood. So I started walking faster, and I kind of got off into the distance there. Anyway, so what happened was, well into the walk there, there came a point where I got to the top of this one hill, and I got up there and I looked, and I couldn't even see him. He was like just a little bit behind me. And I was a minute past, and 2 minutes past, and 3 minutes past. And I was thinking, wow, you know, I want to get going here, you know? Anyway, but it occurred to me that, you know, after a few minutes, 3, 4, 5 minutes past, I thought to myself, well, wait a second, you know, I mean, I'd like to. One inclination was, let me just go. He'll figure it out. But then I thought, well, no, actually, he might not figure it out. He's never been on this walk before. He might not even know how to get back here from the temple. I mean, you know, he might not even know how to get back to the temple from where we are, because we're, you know, just way out there over there. And also, I thought, on top of that, that's kind of bad, you know, bad manners or something. It's not very nice. You know, I invited him to come along on this walk. I can't just ditch him. I have to, you know, I have to take some responsibility. He's my friend, and I was the one who encouraged him to come along, so I got to wait, or I got to go find him or something, you know. So, as I was thinking all that, I saw him, and so, you know, that wasn't so bad. But, you know, we got together, we went the rest of the way. But when I thought of that, I thought, wow, this is an analogy. Can anybody think of what the analogy is? I know Archie probably already kind of thought of it. But no, I thought there's an analogy here, and to, you know, what's going on between Krishna and his devotees. Because Prabhupada says in the Bhagavatam, in one purport in the first canto, he says, our psychology is a reflection of Krishna's psychology. You see? Our psychology is a reflection of Krishna's psychology. So we can understand something about Krishna's psychology, I guess, from understanding our own. So what I was thinking was this, that, you know, just like I'm an ordinary person, right? Ordinary person. But I felt some, you know, I felt some sense of responsibility. I felt some, you know, I had to show some kindness here and, you know, some understanding. So if I'm capable of that, what to speak of Krishna? You know, it's just like in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, abandon all varieties of religion and surrender unto me. I'll protect you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So no, it's just like I invited my friend on that walk. Krishna's inviting us to surrender, right? He's inviting the living entity. He's inviting the conditioned soul. Surrender unto me. I'll protect you from all sinful reactions. So you think it's like when, you know, when we start to do that, if we're not doing so well at some particular point in time, Krishna just says, you're useless, you know, I'll just ditch you. No. Just like an ordinary person, you know, me as an ordinary person, I felt like, well, you know, I have to do the right thing here. So what to speak of Krishna? You know, Krishna is encouraging us to surrender our lives, to, you know, abandon our whatever nice little situation we have in the material world, or not so nice, or whatever, you know, and surrender to him. So then in the process, when we try to do that, and if we have some difficulty, you think Krishna is just going to kind of go, well, tough luck on you, buddy, you know? I mean, see you later. No, it's not like that. Krishna is the most compassionate, the most kind, the most understanding, the most sympathetic, all those good things. The most. Unlimited. Right? So that's the reason, you know, and that's the actual understanding here, you know, because this verse is all talking about how is it possible? How is it possible that somebody could be attached to, you know, wife and children and family and house and this and all this and still be a great devotee, you know? And the purport Prabhupada even goes further. How is it possible that one could even get sidetracked sometimes and, you know, deviated? And he mentions Bilva Mangala Thakur, like that, and still be, you know, a great devotee. And the answer is this, that when you start engaging in devotional service, you're engaging, you're entering into a relationship with Krishna. You're entering into a relationship with the best person that exists, has exists, will exist, etc., etc. You know, you're entering into a relationship with Krishna. And Krishna is the best. I mean, you know, so that's the explanation. That's why it is that even a devotee might get into difficulty. Krishna is so wonderful. Krishna is so kind. Krishna is so compassionate. Krishna is so understanding, etc., you know, all those things, that Krishna just, he sticks with you. He doesn't just ditch you. Krishna helps you through the whole thing. Krishna's, you know, he's patient and he tries to, you know, he's trying to help us in different various ways to get back on track, to get us back into pure devotional service. And that's why it is that Kaunteya Pratijanahi, Name Bhakta Pranashati, that a devotee's never lost. Because Krishna doesn't let his devotee get lost. And just like, you know, even in a family situation, you know, the parents, the child might become a little bit crazy and go away from home and so forth and so on. But the parents are always trying to, you know, keep some sort of a, as much as possible, keep tabs on that child. And whenever it's possible, they're going to be right there to try to help them, you know. So, like that, everybody gets the point. And Prabhupada here in this purport, he's very specific about ways in which impediments to devotional service, and he mentions the first one of those is Vaishnava Aparad. So not a good idea. Not a good idea to commit Vaishnava Aparad, because actually we're totally dependent upon the mercy of Vaishnav to experience any good fortune in life. You know, as I was walking this morning, I was thinking to myself, you know, there's a certain amount of stuff you could learn, you can understand intuitively. Like I was just remembering some different experiences I had. Like, you know, once I was swimming in the ocean and I got out a little too far and I could feel, hey, wait a second. I was swimming, but I could feel, hey, you know what? I'm not going. I was trying to get back in. And I was realizing, I'm not going back in. I'm swimming. I'm out here and I'm swimming, but I'm not moving closer to the shore. I'm just staying about the same. Matter of fact, I think I'm going away. And as I was getting pulled out by a, what do they call it? Riptide or something like that. So I was getting scared. I could understand intuitively. Nobody had to tell me. I could understand intuitively. I'm in danger here. I'm trying. I'm swimming away here, but I'm not, you know. Or once I was driving down a highway and it was at night and it started to rain and it was kind of like a windy one, you know. And you know, I could see like the car was kind of like slipping a little bit, and I could, you know, once again, nobody had to tell me anything. I could understand intuitively, hey, this is dangerous. I mean, I've been driving for 30, 40 years or something like that, but this is like a little different all of a sudden, you know. So, or you might see some, you know, beautiful thing like a brand new Rolls Royce or something like that or whatever, and you can, intuitively, you can understand, oh, this would be enjoyable to have that, you know. So there's certain things you can understand intuitively, but what happens after death? I don't think, no ordinary person can understand what's going to happen then. I mean, there's no ordinary person who intuitively knows that, oh yeah, after death, this is what happens. You know, you go here, you go there, this happens. People, you don't know that. That's outside the boundaries of our intuition for an ordinary person. Self-realized soul, different story perhaps, but you know, ordinary person, no. So, no, it's to have knowledge about the really important things in life, like who we really are, what happens at the time of death, things like that, the actual important things, you need to get that knowledge from, a reliable source, a reliable higher authority, a reliable source of knowledge. You know, you're not going to intuitively be able to understand those things. So, you know, you need to come in contact with a pure devotee, somebody who can give you real knowledge. All right? So we need the Vaishnava to even have access to real knowledge. And then even when you have that knowledge, you need the mercy of the devotee to be able to assimilate it, or, you know, actually get the benefit of that knowledge. Just like, I remember I was reading, I think it was in a book, one of these books by Ian Stevenson, I was just happened to be reading, and he was mentioning that he was having a conversation with some Indian yogi or something like that, and that this man was making the point to him, well, you know, here in India, he's trying to make the point that actually just having knowledge of, say, reincarnation isn't an impetus for people to become more moral necessarily. So he's making the point how in India they've believed in reincarnation since time immemorial, but they have just as many scoundrels in India as any place else in the world. So, you know, just because somebody knows about the next life doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be, and they might know about the idea of karma and how they're going to be punished for their sinful activities in the next life. It's not necessarily a deterrent to performing sinful activities. So, and that's confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. In the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks Krishna, by what is one impelled to act sinfully, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force? Making the point that sometimes, you know, you might know what you're supposed to do, and you don't do it. Or you might know what you're not supposed to do, and you do it anyway. So, in other words, it's not enough to have knowledge. You have to have, detachment, genuine detachment. And once again, unless you have the mercy of the pure devotee, you're not going to have knowledge, and you're not going to have the detachment to actually, you're not going to be able to actually properly utilize that knowledge in your life. So we're completely dependent upon the mercy of, Vaishnavas, the spiritual master in particular, and advanced Vaishnavas in general, to make advancement in devotional service. So it's not a good idea to offend them. You know, we want to do this the opposite. What to speak of? Offend Vaishnavas. We really don't. That's the last thing we want to do. We want to, become more expert at learning how to associate with them and serve them favorably, and that will help us. And as a means to that, and of course we know, there's the basic things: chanting 16 rounds, following the four regulative principles, and so many different instructions. But actually, just yesterday morning, we heard one. Nice instruction that I wanted to mention this morning, because it seemed to me when I heard it that Prabhupada, this was something that we hear repeatedly, and that Prabhupada did among so many instructions that he gave us. Prabhupada gave us so many instructions, and they're all important. You know, they're all super important. But it seemed to me that, you know, if we're going to be objective, there were certain things that Prabhupada did tend to stress a bit more than others, or place a special emphasis on, let's put it that way. And we heard one of those yesterday when I think it was Archituba who was reading that excerpt from the Chaitanya Charitamrita that he does every morning. And this is what it was, and I'll just read it again now. He says, the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness cannot even call themselves Brahma Bandhus. Therefore, our only means for satisfying Krishna is to pursue the injunctions of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who says, Yade deka tare kaha Krishna upadesh amara agyaya guruhana tare desh. Whomever you meet, instruct him on the teachings of Krishna. In this way, on my order, become a spiritual master and deliver the people in this country. That's Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhulila, chapter 7, text 128. Simply trying to follow the orders of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we speak to the people of the world about Bhagavad Gita as it is. This will make us qualified to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, it seemed to me that, I know my service is booked as Vishnu, I'm doing this, attempting to. But, so you might think, as Bhrigupati, here he is going again, just going to talk about preaching or whatever. But, I think aside from the fact that I do have that partiality, but it seems to me that, as I said, if you're trying to look at it objectively, this is kind of an important thing, and it's something Prabhupada is placing emphasis on, for all the members of the, as he says here, the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. This is something that's important that we should try to, if we're not already doing it, or if we can't be doing it, see ourselves doing it right away, we should kind of not just disregard this and just think, oh, this is for the Sankirtan devotees, or this is for somebody else, but not me. No, it's something it's for the members of the Krishna Consciousness, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It's an instruction that's there for all of us. And, it's something that will help us. It'll help us in our advancement in devotional service. Just like there's on the roads is that transit lane. There's the slow lane and the fast lane. Sometimes you hear that analogy given anyway, that when preaching, actually Prabhupada said it. It's not just an analogy. Prabhupada said to be quickly recognized by Krishna, preaching is the shortcut process. And, he said that on more than one occasion in more than one place. So it's something to always, to meditate upon. And another point that occurred to me is this has actually occurred to me yesterday when I was on Sankirtan. I was beginning of the day, and I was noticing how I was kind of I was walking around, and I was kind of seeing these people who looked like people I could approach, and I was kind of approaching them. I was getting close, and then I was kind of hesitating, you know. And I was, what's going on here? And I realized I was feeling kind of self-conscious, and I was feeling that way, self-conscious, embarrassed a little bit. And then I stopped and I thought about that for a second. I said, what is this, you know? And I realized, well, I'm feeling self-conscious, I'm feeling embarrassed. So I tried to analyze it. I said, what's that? And I said, well, it's the false ego. You know, it's a false ego. And then it occurred to me that part of understanding, you know, that we're not this body is understanding that we're not the false ego. In other words, like the body is, you know, is the eight material elements. There's earth, water, fire, air, ether. Those are the gross ones, right? But then there's mind, intelligence, and false ego. So part of understanding that you're not the body, which is, you know, one of the first instructions that we get in Krishna consciousness, is understanding that we're not this false ego. So I just, you know, I realized, well, you know, hey, if I'm going to just surrender to this, you know, and just kind of surrender to this embarrassed feeling of embarrassment and self-consciousness, that means I'm just not understanding I'm not the body. You know, I just have to just kind of like blow by this. I'm just going to have to do it anyway. And just, you know, just like when you're in the morning, when you hop into that shower, you know, you have to do it whether it's going to feel comfortable or not. Sometimes it is comfortable in the summertime, but in the winter you just feel like, well, I don't want to do this, you know, but you got to do it. So I just decided, yeah, I'm just going to do it. I don't care if I'm feeling a little bit embarrassed or self-conscious, something like that. I'll just kind of just push myself through, you know, forward and do it. And, you know, fortunately, that was the right thing to do. I think Krishna, you know, appreciated that, and he reciprocated. And, you know, and those people took a book, and then a bunch of other people, you know, I just got over that feeling, in other words. I guess transcended or whatever. So anyways, it's an important part of our Krishna conscious development. And a lot of times it's, I'm mentioning this because, you know, sometimes we have to ask ourselves, well, why aren't I preaching more? Why am I not going out on book distribution? Why am I not, or going out and doing, you know, college preaching or this kind of, you know, some kind of preaching? Why am I not interacting more with the non-devotees in an attempt to attract them to devotional service? Well, this might be part of the reason. You know, you might be feeling like, oh, I don't know, I'm not so intellectual. I don't know if I'll be able to really present the philosophy properly, or I don't know. You know, all different sorts of self-conscious reasons. But we have to just go beyond that. You just have to forget that. You know, you just have to remember that I am an eternal servant of Krishna. You know, I'm not this body. I'm not this mind. I'm not this, you know, intelligence or false ego. I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. That's my actual identity. So, you know, there's no reason for me to feel embarrassed, self-conscious about trying to attract another soul, and, you know, to engage in Krishna's service. That, as I mentioned, as I said, because that might be, whether we're even conscious of it or not, a reason why we're not preaching more, because you feel a bit uncomfortable, you know, when you're trying to do it. But that's Maya. The point is, that's Maya. We have to just, just like getting up early or taking the shower or whatever, you just have to just get yourself to do it anyway, and then it goes away. Once you get in the, you know, the expression, get in the fire, it goes away. It goes away. But it's a lot of times it's there, and it's, you know, it can be something that keeps us from doing it. And one final point, so I can end at 10 past 8, like this nice notice says, is they say, you know, there's an expression, Prabhupada quotes it in one purport in the Bhagavad Gita, that God helps those who help themselves. It's a very good point, you know. We have to be our own, be our own advocates. You know, that's just the way it works in life. You know, and it's like somebody might be thinking, well, you know, I'd like to preach more. I'd like to get out on Sankirtan or do this. But, you know, nobody's making the arrangement for me. Well, the fact of the matter is, you know, there is management. And just like there's management in the temples, management in the government. But the fact of the matter is, in life, if you want to get something, go get someplace, you got to be your own advocate. You got to, you know, have a little bit of a go-getter attitude. You know, you got to make it happen. You know, you can't just wait for somebody to come and, you know, engage you and say, Prabhu, would you like to be a GBC? No, you know, if you want something, you got, or, you know, this or that, you know, you got to go for it a little bit. Like Amala Bhakta, nobody came and said, would you like to become an author? No, yeah, he decided, okay, I want to start writing. So he just did what he had to do, and he made the transition, you see. Just an example off the top of my head. So we have to do like that. You got to be your own self-advocate. Another example, this is actually the example that got me onto this point, was, you know, got this motorhome, and after Rath Yatra, I was supposed to, you know, come back and just, I had to move it out while they were getting ready for the Rath Yatra. And then after the Rath Yatra, carts were supposed to, you know, go someplace and the motorhome goes back in there. But after Rath Yatra, what happened was Lord Balaram decided to come back after Rath Yatra and park in that big parking lot. So, you know, my motorhome was out. And they told me, okay, well, you know, it's going to be just a couple of weeks, a few weeks, and Ratna will disassemble the cart because we're making these new carts. And he's going to, you know, once he disassembles that cart, then there'll be space again and you can go back in there. So, you know, 3 weeks pass, 4 weeks pass, 5 weeks pass, 1 month pass, 2 months pass, 3 months pass, 4 months pass. Nobody was, you know, nothing was happening. So I was, and I was trying to think, well, I've got to take the humble position. I mean, this is Lord Balaram. I'm not, you know, I'm getting kicked out for Lord, so Lord Balaram's cart can be there. I suppose that's, you know, I should, you know, cooperate and everything. But, I mean, I could see, the point is that if I didn't, I just had to, at some point, I just realized, hey, you know what? I'm going to have to just figure this out myself. If I don't, my motorhome will be out on the street forever. I'll just have to have the hassle of parking it, moving it once a week and having people scrape along the side of it because it's too wide to be parked on the local street. I gotta figure this out for myself. So I did. I just decided, well, I got one space in there. I'll just give up that space and figure out a way to move these other vans around and I'll get the thing in there. And, you know, so it's worked out fine. But the point is, I had to, you know, self-advocacy. I had to, nobody came and, you know, Nakatma didn't approach me and say, Brigwood, let me figure out this motorhome problem for you, you know? Or, no, it didn't work like that. You know, I had to kind of take it upon myself to figure it out and get the whole thing done. So anyway, so the point is, if you're hearing about this, you know, instruction about preaching and you're feeling like, yeah, I would like to preach more. I would like to, you know, do some type of preaching more. You know, don't wait for somebody to come talk to you about it. You know, the instruction's there, right? It's there in that purport. And, you know, you could probably open any of Prabhupada's books and you can find it's, you know, it's all over. It's such a, you know, instruction that Prabhupada emphasized and re-emphasized and re-emphasized. It's the essence of the Krishna conscious movement. Preaching is the essence, right? So you got to just start with yourself and just kind of come up with a plan, you know, just people will, and then just present it. Present it to somebody. Pitch it, you know? And, you know, you'll get help. You'll see Krishna, because Krishna's in the heart, ultimately, you know. Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Radeshe Arjuna Tishtati Brahmayan Sarvabhutanam. You know, he's directing the wanderings of all living entities. He's Savarsha Chaham Ridisani Vishto. He's, you know, controlling the, he's giving knowledge, remembrance, forgetfulness. So, you know, if we have a desire to increase our devotional service, to increase our preaching, and we make some effort, then Krishna will inspire the appropriate personalities, you know, that you need cooperation from to cooperate. You know, to cooperate. And, you know, things will work out. And maybe even if it doesn't happen right off the bat, it'll happen. Each Krishna might just be testing your determination to see how, you know, determined you are to really do that initially. But if you have that and you that desire and you try to make it happen, then, you know, Krishna will inspire different people to cooperate and it will happen. So it's now 8:10, so I'll stop there. And does anybody have any questions? Prem's time, first hand to go up.
In a purport, it's explained how there are two kind of impediments to progress in devotional service. One is Vaishnava Parada, another one is desire of the Lord. That's the desire of the Lord is another kind of impediment. It is mentioned also something about here in Akashipu. This is example, but we are not on that level. But what is in the case of ordinary devotees, you know, what kind of how you're concerned okay. About desire of the Lord?
Yeah, you asked the question, if nobody asked that, I had that earmarked to say something about it if I had time. The only thing that came to my mind when I read that was that, you know, that verse Yasyahamana Nugrami, how to say Taddanam Shanai, that where Krishna says, I think it's in the 10th canto, that when I'm particularly you know, favor somebody, when I particularly show my mercy upon to them, first thing I do is I take away all their wealth. So that could be an example of what Prabhupada's talking about here. That's the only thing I could come up with. You know, the desire of the Supreme Personality of God when Krishna could see that somebody is very sincere, but at the same time is very attached, you know, to their material situation, then Krishna might, you know, do that. He'll smash that person, you know, or dismantle their arrangements for their material well-being like that. And so they have to you know, take, be more dependent upon him. So perhaps that's an example of what Prabhupada's talking about here, the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to impede one's devotion. It's superficially. It's obviously, Krishna has no malicious intent. It's superficially, it appears as if, you know, Krishna is impeding one's devotional service, but it's actually not really the case. He's just sort of like doing something that's going to enable that devotee to come to a more mature and significant position in devotional service. But initially, it superficially appears as if it's kind of a bit of an obstruction for him. That's the only thing I was able to think of. Somebody else perhaps could maybe add more to that. Drew DeKarma, you're kind of getting ready to say something? Oh, okay.
Thanks for the class, Prabhu. It was very inspirational, especially the preaching part. It was a very good class. My question is just as you were, you had the experience of you were walking, and that experience gave you a realization of Krishna towards the devotee. Also, I wanted to hear what was your sastric revelation that you got when you were trying to swim back to the shore and you couldn't come back in. What type of realization did you have? I know someone in Florida. They got caught in that tide and got taken out 12 miles into sea, and they actually were stuck out there for 24 hours. They treaded water 24 hours before they got picked up, and I just couldn't imagine just being out there at nighttime alone. You know, Bob and I asked him. I said, "What was your realization?" He said that the body is nothing but shark food. He realized that he was going that the body was meant to be eaten, and either he was going to get eaten by worms, or he was going to get, you know, when he died, another way, or he was going to get eaten by a shark right then. So, but what was your realization of trying to swim back?
I used that as an example to make the point that there's certain things you might know intuitively. Like I knew intuitively in that particular situation, I was in trouble, you know. But another realization is that eventually what I had to do is I just had to scream out for help. I couldn't get back in, so I just started screaming, and the lifeguards came out and they came out with the boat and they kind of pulled me back in because I couldn't get back in. And I was kind of getting really scared there, you know. But we're helpless. We're helpless. we don't have to be in that situation to realize that we're helpless. We're helpless. And, the sooner we realize we have to really depend upon, you know, the mercy of Krishna and Vaishnavas like that, then, the better we'll be, the more quickly we'll make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Because, you could say it's like an analogous situation again, because here we are, we're here in this material world. You know, Lord Chaitanya prays, Ainanda tanujikin karam patitam mam vishamem bhavam bhura kripaya tava pada pankaja stita duli sarvasam vichintaya. O son of Maharaj Nanda Krishna, I am your eternal servant. And yet, although I am so, somehow or another, I fall into this ocean of birth and death. And Prabhupada explains, once you're in the ocean, that's it. You're in the ocean of birth and death. I think there's one purport in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, even the best swimmer, if he's, dropped in the middle of the ocean, you don't make it. You need help. You need help from a superior. Otherwise, you're just not going to make it. So we have to realize that, we need help. We need help. Nobody makes it out of this material world without the help of the, Vaishnav like that. So we're really, once we have to understand our helpless position and cry out for the help of the mercy of the Vaishnav. Just like I actually have to cry out. I have to say, help, help. And somebody heard me and they got the lifeguard to come out with the boat. So in the same way, we have to really chant Hare Krishna, like, Krishna, please, help me. I am in the ocean of birth and death. Please pick me up. Just like Lord Chaitanya prays, please pick me up and place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. And that atoms at the lotus feet means please engage me in service. Okay, so that is, 8:17, so 2 minutes over time. Thank you very much. Gantraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.